Blog Talk Radio. Imagine feeling so depressed that you're ready to end your life. Two people in crisis, worlds apart, decided at the same time, own your own life or lose it. How can you quickly turn your life around now before it's too late? Stay tuned. Welcome to my radio show. I'm your host, Dr. Erica Goodstone, licensed mental health counselor, healing through love relationship healer, somatic body psychotherapist, and health and wellness coach, helping men and women heal their bodies and their relationships through love. Author of the Love Me, Touch Me, Heal Me book series, the romantic novel Love in the Blizzard of Life, and Love Lessons for Your Soul. His show is all about living your dreams, fulfilling your life purpose, and creating and sustaining love and health and total well-being for the rest of your life, no matter what age you are right now. In every episode, I speak with vibrant, exciting, and positive men and women who just keep proving that life can and often does get better and better as we reach our 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and beyond. Depressed, bulimic, hopeless, and running away from an abusive relationship in a hotel room, Steph tied a rope around her neck, dropped to the floor, and everything went blank. Feeling totally abandoned, filled with self-hate and rage at the world, James turned to drugs, then petty theft to fuel his addictions. Then he found himself in prison, locked up in solitary confinement. Together, James and Steph Purpura, after connecting and changing their life perspective, became the catalyst for others like you to make dramatic life changes. You can read their new book, Perception, Seeing is Not Believing, or watch their amazing, raw, sensitive, intimate, and transformative movie, Perception, Seeing is Not Believing. So I'm delighted to welcome you today, James Purpura.
Thank you so much. I'm delighted to be here.
Yeah, I'm really excited to speak to you and have you tell us your really sensitive story that so many people cannot imagine falling into the situation that you did, but there are many people that have. I have two close friends that have had that issue. And so tell us, what happened? How did you get into such a dark place that, you know, you were ready to give up on life? And then what made that change?
So I think, you know, what we try to demonstrate in both the book and the movie is that everybody is on a path to somewhere. And without intervention, you're going to end up in that place. The problem is that most of us don't have the self-awareness to see where our current path is carrying us. And so when we get there, we act like it's a shock or surprise because we haven't really looked at it. And so, you know, a big part of our journey is understanding perception and, you know, what are the creative elements in our lives? And, you know, I had some really abusive situations growing up. And because I didn't have parents that were in a position to help me through those, you know, those abusive situations and the beliefs I adopted by living through those situations put me on a path to this very dark ending. And, you know, based on that, I was more or less destined to get there.
So do you feel people are destined to get to a dark place if they have abuse at an early age?
No, definitely not. So let me kind of take you into my jail cell. So I'm in jail. I'm sitting in solitary confinement. And I used to write these long lists of people who I felt like who had harmed me. So I felt like I was a victim of circumstance, right? And things were happening to me, not because of me. And one day I had an epiphany, and here's what the epiphany was. I looked down at this long list of people who I felt like had harmed me, and it struck me that the only common denominator between all of those situations was, in fact, me. And then I had a thought, well, what if I somehow created all of this stuff? And then I thought about it, because I never really at that point thought about being the creator of my existence. And so I thought about what being the creator of my existence meant. And what I decided was, well, I couldn't have created some of it. Either I create everything or I create nothing. And so as I examined those two choices of what to believe, if I created nothing, right, and the world was just really happening to me, it meant that the world really was a crappy place because bad things had happened to me and that I had no control and bad things were going to continue to happen to me. Therefore, I probably didn't want to hang out and play anymore. And then as I examine the other half of that, which was, well, what if I am the creator of my existence? That means I have to take responsibility for everything that ever happened to me. But what does it mean? It means I could create something new and magical in its place. And so it was on that day I decided that I was the creator of my existence. And, you know, I might realize much later it was on that day that I took my power back as I took responsibility for everything that ever happened to me. And so the next question I had to ask myself is, if I did create my life, what was the creative elements? How did I get to this place I was in? And so I went back to the abuse, the first abuse situation I had was, which was in the kindergarten class. My kindergarten teacher, would tell me every day that I was stupid and make the whole class call me stupid as I was on my way out to my room to my resource class. And so I thought to myself, well, did this abuse create my life? And I thought, well, if it was the abuse, then I'm stuck forever because I can't go back and change the abuse. Right? And so as I thought about that, I thought, well, you know, not everybody who's incurred abuse has allowed it to destroy them. So that couldn't have been the creative element. Well, what was it? It's what I chose to believe about myself having had lived through the abuse. You know, when I went home and told my mom that night what was going on, if she would have intervened and helped me understand that none of that was about me, I could have been pushed down a different path, but she didn't. She wasn't in a place to do that. So it was, in fact, what I chose to believe about myself that created my life. And so it wasn't about the abuse. It was what I believed about myself because of that abuse.
This is very important that you just clarified something, because when you say I create my life, well, you're not creating the other human beings and you're not creating their behavior. You know, things happen.
Correct.
But what you're creating is how to deal with it, how to respond to it, and how to feel about yourself.
Because bad things happen to good people all the time, right? And so as I started to think about it, when I take responsibility, I never take responsibility for the other person's actions, right? I only ever take responsibility for what I chose to believe about myself coming out of that situation. Because it's your beliefs through perception that create your reality. Their part in it is none of your business. I mean, that's literally their stuff. Right. And so you don't get to own their stuff. They get to own their stuff because we all hard things happen to us, but not all of us let it destroy us.
Right. That's the important thing. I took EST a long, long time ago. And what I remember more than anything is there was a woman who stood up and said she had been raped, and that's why she was fat now, you know, it was protective. So he asked other women to stand up in the group who had been raped, and they were not all fat. You know, they coped with it in a different way.
Right. And so, you know, in this example, you know, I went home after that. And so here's a teacher calling me stupid. And so I went home and I told my mom what happened. And my mom was an undiagnosed bipolar, you know, manic depressive. My stepdad worked 15 hours a day and my real dad was off doing drugs. And my mom just said she didn't have the skills to deal with a situation of this magnitude. She just said, look, the world's a tough place. You're just going to have to learn to deal with it. And so I hoped that that was a one-day occurrence, but it wasn't. It happened to me every day through my kindergarten year. And so had my mom had the wherewithal to jump into that situation and get me the help I needed in that moment, right, then my life would have turned out very differently. But I was stuck with the beliefs of a five-year-old, and those beliefs, you know, created my life. But here's the interesting part. When I tell this story, you know what people often tell me? Is they say to me, they're like, oh, but you were only five. What choice did you have? And I said, well, you just robbed me of all my power, right? Even though I made the most logical conclusion based on the information that was available, it was still my choice. And that choice is what created my life. And that's what you need to understand. You know, that woman who stood up and she was overweight, you know, that was her protective mechanism, right? She insulated herself through food. But we all have protective mechanisms that we adopt throughout our life, whether it's, you know, addiction or different ways of feeling safe. But, you know, it's the choice, our choice on what to believe creates our perception. Our perception creates our interpretations of the world, and that's where we make our decisions, and that's how we create our lives. So when we go back and we're able to change what we believe, you know, I love it. Wayne Dyer, his old saying was, when you change the way you think, look at things, the things you look at change. Right?
Yes.
And that is, you know,
and
in one sentence, the most profound thing.
Yeah, and you're also talking about not just changing what you believe right now, but even changing what you believe about what happened in the past.
So I love that. I think I heard in your introduction that you're a somatic teacher. And so what most people understand is that emotions live in the body. They don't live in the mind.
Mm-hmm.
And so you cannot impact your future from the present. You can only manage things as they come out. So here's what people need to understand is that here's the way your perception works. Every time you're having an experience, your mind does something similar to a Google search. And essentially what it does is because we actually don't have any access to reality. We only have access to what we think reality is. And where we get that knowledge is from our past. So your mind goes into your past memories, and it finds past memories that are similar to the situation you're having now. And it says, this is what it means now because this is what it means in the past. Well, here's what the part that people don't understand is that, you know, all of us have emotions that don't seem to fit the current situation. You know, so all of a sudden our kid spills their milk and we're mad and we're angry and we're yelling at them and our spouse is looking at us like we're crazy because it's a little spilled milk. But why do we have such deep emotions about things that we shouldn't? And it's because when your perception sources your past to dictate or your present, all those past memories have an emotion attached to them. And that emotion comes with the memory. You have no control over that. And so the best thing you can do in the present is manage the emotion, because you don't know what memory or emotion came because you're not privy to what's in your subconscious mind. The best you can do is manage it. So if you want to change your life substantially, you literally have to go into the past, into these past traumas, process the emotions that it got stuck in there. So the next time, unbeknownst to you, that your perception sources that memory to predict what's going to happen in the present, that it comes with a different emotional response.
Mm. Well, yeah, you say something related to this, that we never made a bad decision. So I don't understand what you mean by that. I'd love you to explain it, because most of us think we've made a lot of bad decisions, especially if our emotions got in the way.
Absolutely. So I tell people that, and they're like, James, I've made a lot of bad decisions. And I'm like, no, you've never made a bad decision. And matter of fact, you're not even capable of making a bad decision unless you're mentally ill or a sociopath. And I said, well, what does that mean? And I said, what it means is that you're only ever, when you make a decision, you're only ever making the best decision you can at the time with the information you have available to you. A bad decision would be making a decision that you think is in your best, in your worst interest. I'm going to make a decision right now, and it's going to be against what I think I need right now. We don't do that. That would be a bad decision. And so what's the difference? The difference is you've only ever made decisions with bad information. And so that's why things don't turn out the way we want them to, is because the information is bad. And, you know, some people would say that's phonetics, but I'm like, no, it's not. And here's the difference. It means there's nothing wrong with you. We all make decisions the same way. Stop beating yourself up for your bad decisions, because you didn't make a bad decision because you didn't set out to make a decision that was against your best interest. You're only ever doing the best you can with the information you have available to you. And so the problem is not you or the way that you make decisions. The problem is, in fact, the information you're sourcing for your decisions, right? Because we're all only doing the best we can. I'll look at somebody and be like, I'm not saying the best you can is living up to your potential. In any given moment, we're just doing the best we can, because that's all we have. So in order to make better decisions, we have to go back and change the information that we access to make our decisions, which is in fact our perception, which sources our past. If we made bad decisions in the past about what things meant, then we're going to make bad decisions in the future about what they mean again. So the only way to do that, to change, is to go back and question the source of information and be able to question your interpretations of the world. Is what I'm seeing or feeling right now accurate? Right? That's the question to be asking. Because we assume we see reality, which we most certainly don't. What we see is the past being, you know, inputted on the future. Well, if you were wrong in the past, you're going to be wrong again in the future. And unless you're willing to be open to question everything, right? And it starts by going into the past and start questioning these interpretations of self in the world.
I love the way you're describing it, because I've had so many clients come, and when I start taking a history, they say, why do I have to go back to my family? Why do I have to look at that? They might be in their 50s or 60s, you know, or any age, and they think they don't have to look back. But it influences everything if you haven't looked at it.
Right. And so we have what we call an emotional integration technique. And I'll tell you something that's super fascinating about what I've discovered. And so the emotional integration technique is basically, it's a somatic meditation. It really is a body-based meditation, right? And so I've walked hundreds of people through this. And I keep seeing the same narrative come up every single time. So, you know, I would ask somebody, bring up something that makes you mad, right? And I said, it doesn't matter what it is. Your neighbor's dog, you know, poops in your yard, you know, you're whatever it is, somebody at work, you know, it doesn't matter. So I'll have them bring up something that's mad. We'll find out where that is in their body, or their chest or their stomach or their core. And when we go in to feel that pain in the body, that pain's got a memory attached to it. Now, after hundreds of times of walking people through this process, it's always the same memory. And it's their first notable rejection. Because that was the that was the beginning of fear. And every piece of fear, so when you suffer this first massive rejection in your life, you know, what we're starting to discover and uncover is that from that point forward, everything that happens after that is impacted by that one situation. And that was where we adopted fear. That's when we became, we got kicked out of the we, and we became an I, and whatever I is not good enough. And now for the fight for our survival takes off, and our ego starts spinning up personas trying to protect us.
And what I'm hearing as you're saying this is it goes further than that. If we don't look at it, that's where illnesses can start, because it's festering in that body part. And it's so interesting that you've located the point where it started.
So we've located the point where it started. Now it gets stored in different places based off of different situations, because we have disruption everywhere. And so, you know, what we're starting to identify is that if you have a tendency to run away or fail to run away, you know, the disruption is in your spine, lower spine, down by your root. If you've incurred sexual abuse, generally it's in the stomach, because that's where our disgust mechanism is. If it's betrayal, it's in the heart. If you feel like you're carrying the weight of the world on your shoulders, it's in your shoulders. Most every single woman, actually most human beings, have massive disruption in their throat, because that's the voice of fear. And so it shows up everywhere, but in the major places it shows up, if you think about your central nervous system as nothing but an extension to your brain, and to be very clear, it's an electrical system, and where these emotions get trapped, you know, it kind of clogs up the system, and so the electricity is not clearly moving up from your brain down your central nervous system and up. You know, it has to divert past and things like that. And wherever these disruptions are, it definitely starts manifesting in physical sickness and illness.
So tell us about this 4-step emotional integration technique. What do you do? Just briefly, maybe you can explain the 4 steps.
You know, so I can just, if anybody's listening and wants to walk through it as we go through the phone, I'll just walk a quick process.
Right.
Okay. All right. So I'll do it with you as well. So do you know something that makes you mad?
Oh, not currently, but I can think of a neighbor who was interfering with my car, put his stuff out on a terrace right next to where my car was parked. You know, so irritated.
Okay, so I would invite you and everybody else to just bring up anything that makes you mad. And so for you, just bring up that situation in your mind with your neighbor, and just bring it up and allow yourself to be mad in this moment. I promise everybody and all the listeners, allow yourself to be mad. Just let it go and tell me when you have it up, when you can feel it.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, so where in your body is that thing showing up? That anger.
The feeling is in the solar plexus.
Okay, so it's in your solar plexus.
Right.
Now, here's the key.
Yeah.
I want you to feel the pain in your solar plexus. Anybody who's listened to me, it doesn't matter where the pain is, shoulder, heart, throat, stomach, back. I want you to feel the pain. And this is not a thinking thing. This is a feeling thing. I want you to feel into the pain. And there is an early childhood memory attached to that pain. And the memory should just pop into your mind, kind of like the first time you remember feeling the same pain. And don't think, just feel the pain.
Mm-hmm.
You have it?
Yeah.
Is it something you feel comfortable in sharing on the air? It certainly don't have to.
Yeah, it's a personal situation with my mother when she was
okay.
At head count, you know, and... Yes, that's what came to me immediately.
Okay, so it was a personal situation when you were young with your mother, right? And I will bet you felt some form of rejection in this situation.
Yes, definitely.
Okay.
And recently I've talked about it again, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. So most people are really shocked by the memory it comes up. Like, I haven't thought about this in years. I literally walked somebody through this the other night, and their memory was a Nerf gun fight that they were left out of. Right? And it was like, but it was a deep mm-hmm. rejection because all of his friends were there. And I'm like, he's like, you're telling me that all of my addiction was tied to me not being invited to a Nerf gun battle. And I'm like, that's what I'm telling you. That was the adoption of fear. Right? And that's how simple it is that in that moment with your mom, and it's here's what most people need to understand is that when you are a child, you do not feel separate from your parents, right? When you suffer your first rejection, you know, you don't feel separate from your parents because you're a part of the we. When you suffer your first rejection, what happens is you become part of, you are now an I, and whatever I is not good enough. And it's always more brutal when it's a parent because that's where the separation occurs. And so this idea of separation mm-hmm. is in every spiritual tradition. It's not from God, it's from each other. Right, because now you're an I, and whatever I am is not good enough, and your ego says, starts spinning up personas and says, well, I got to gain acceptance, because in our DNA, when we were in tribes, essentially, you know, when you got kicked out of the tribe, it meant you were going to die in an ugly death, and the only way to gain control back was to seek validation, to seek acceptance of the tribe, to get accepted back in, or to take control of the tribe, and so this is what starts this. I need to gain people's acceptance, or I need to control everything, because you now think that you're an I, and I is not good enough, and you're fighting for your survival. But none of that was true, right? In that moment that your mom rejected you didn't mean that you were fighting for your survival, and we're still 100% dependent on one another. And so the whole survival right. narrative, it's not true. So essentially what I would say is, to explain this very simply to people, is that from that moment, you believe the fight for your survival begun, but the truth is we're not fighting for our survival anymore. It's no longer on the table. This is an out-of-date program. And so essentially the first step of the technique is to bring up whatever you're angry about in any given moment. Go back and feel into the anger. The anger will have a memory attached to it. Go back to that place in the memory and then process that emotion that got stuck in that memory. So what I would say is go back into that situation with your mom, and I want you to find yourself, and anybody who's listening, just go back to that situation, find yourself just after the rejection happened, and I want you to go down, and I want you to sit down next to yourself, and I want you to whisper this in your ear. I want you to say that you are safe, that you are good, and there's nothing wrong with you, and that you now have an amazing life because of the strength of that younger version of you. And I want you to thank that version of you for their strength, for their love. And I want you to tell them there's nothing wrong with them. And I want you to give them the love they needed in that situation that you didn't get from your mom. Or whatever situation it is, you give that younger version of you love. And then I want you to allow yourself to feel the pain that you didn't feel in that moment, that pain that got stuck there, whatever it is, that feeling of rejection, and let it burn inside of you. And then I want you to be grateful for that pain and grateful for that. And then I want you to understand that this pain no longer serves you. And I want you to move love and gratitude in that pain and just allow yourself to feel it until it completely dissipates. Because it's unprocessed because you repressed it in that moment. And as you feel that pain, just let it, just breathe love and gratitude into it. And I'll give everybody a minute. You should just start feeling this lifting, this freeing situation. So let me explain to you what we just did. So essentially what we did was we went back to an old memory where there was pain and there was fear, and we just imprinted love and gratitude into that memory. So the next time that your mind sources that memory to predict your current situation, it comes with a different emotional response, which is love and gratitude. And this is how we create happiness, is we go through and we declutter our past of all of these unprocessed emotions. Now, that's what you should do. That's the emotional integration technique. And afterwards, you just breathe into and notice the white noise in your head or the static you hear in your head, and then that's home. Because all the noise in your head is coming from your body. It's your physiology speaking to you about these past fears being stuck. And so now that we're at the first rejection, I want you to do one more thing. I want you to go back to that younger version of you. And I want you to tell them that they're safe now and that you need them. Because this is the most authentic, pure version of you. The happiest version of you. And I want you to put that version wherever that in your body, and I want you to move them into your heart. Because the only thing you've been doing through your fear your whole life is protect that version of you. But when we're young, we adopt fear because we don't have the physical or mental capacity to defend ourselves. But you are now a grown adult, and you do. And so I want you to tell them that you need them because life hasn't been fun without them. And I want you to move that version of you into your heart, and I want you to put everything else that you love there. And I just want you to feel that love for that younger version of you. And so as you go back into this process and you find all of these fears that you've adopted in different parts of your life and they're stuck in different parts of your body, you need to honor and thank the version of you and stop beating up the prior versions of you. You need to honor and thank them because they were only doing the best they can to protect you. And you're here today because of their strength. And so essentially what you're doing is you're integrating all of the past versions into you, into the present as you go through this. So the steps would be step one, bring up the anger, the frustration, the depression. Step two is find out where it's at in your body. And then you feel into that emotion. The emotion will give you the memory. Go back into the memory and put in a new emotion. And that's how you go into your past, impact your future. And this doesn't have to be a long process. But the key is, and this is what most people need to understand, is that your emotions are your window into your subconscious mind. They are the only insight you have into it. And so oftentimes, we project our emotions. We make our emotions about other people. Why are you making them mad? Or we repress our emotions. We push them into our body or do both. And so often we make other people's emotions about us, and we're robbing them of the opportunity of doing that. Your emotions weren't there to tell you there's something wrong on the outside. They're there to tell you something's wrong on the inside. And so you can always follow an emotion back to a memory.
Yeah, James, it's pretty amazing what you're doing. In the body work, we get to that when someone is doing the talk and the counseling. And you can get down to those emotions. But many of us, and many times, we're doing a lot of talking about it. We might remember intellectually what happened, but we are not processing the emotion. So I think that's really
common. That's the only point. If you're only going back and talking about it intellectually, right, then you're just stirring it
mm-hmm.
up, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you've just done more harm.
You're reinforcing it. Mm-hmm.
You're reinforcing it. You're stirring it up. You've done more harm because now it's going to come up. That emotion's going to start surfacing more and more because when an emotion surfaces, all it's surfacing to tell you is, I'm stuck. Please process me. And if you ignore it, it comes
mm-hmm.
back bigger and stronger. I'm stuck. Please process me. Right? And you can't ignore it forever, but we do because, and I mean, look, here's the whole point of our book and the movie. There's two things that dictate your life, your perception and your emotions. Yet none of us understand what they mean or how to process them or what to do with them. I mean, it's like, that is mind-blowing to me. This is the stuff we should be talking about every single day because once you understand and take control of this, you can create anything you want, right? On the inside and mm-hmm. on the outside.
So you say something about the change, it's hard for people to sustain a change that they make. So maybe they get in touch with this. Why is it hard to maintain it?
It's because they don't get in touch with this. So it's because what most people's model of change is to try to address the habit. The habit is at the level of effect. The belief is the cause. And so it's like you go to the doctor and the doctor, you know, says, hey, you're overweight. And you're like, why am I overweight? Because you eat too much and you don't exercise. So what do? You go out and you start eating less and you start exercising. Now, at that point, you have a 90% chance of failure. In dieting, 94. Well, let's just call it 90%, right? But let's say you're one of the 10% who do change. Of the 10% who do change, 70% of those people gain all the weight back after they've lost it all. So they made it all the way to their goal, and they give it all back. And the answer is why? And it's because the doctor asked the wrong question. The right question would have been, what is the belief that is driving your unhealthy relationship with food? It's because we think change is about behavior, when change was never about behavior, it was about beliefs. So what happens is essentially that we go about changing the behavior, and so this is kind of the white-knuckle approach, right? And when we get to the end of the journey, and we're like, well, I lost all the weight, and so I might as well take all of this, you know, conscious attention I've been putting on this and put it somewhere else. Well, if you didn't inadvertently change the belief that was driving the behavior, as soon as you take your conscious mind off of the white knuckle process, the belief comes in and resets the behavior and you gain the weight back. And that's how it is with all change, is that you can only ever change at the level of perception. If you don't change the belief, then you're only ever white knuckling it. And so everybody's always like, do the work, do the work, do the work. Well, the work is not at the level of effect. It's at the cause. The work is going in and figuring out, okay, I have an unhealthy relationship with food or with porn or with anything else, right? What belief is driving this behavior? When you change the belief, then you're basically cutting the legs out from underneath the behavior. It becomes very easy to change the behavior. And that's the difference between, like, resistance and flow.
Powerful. So what, we're going to be ending pretty soon. What is personal evolution, and how does it work within your powerful you philosophy?
So, you know, what I call personal evolution is the, I'm going to read it right off our website for you because I think it's super interesting, but it's the idea that it's eliminating the beliefs. I'm going to get it wrong. So it's really about working at the level of belief, right? So when you think about it this way, it's the quick definition for it is the process of shifting your perception by removing the contradicting thoughts, beliefs, and actions that stand between who you are now and who you want to become. And so we have this company called Powerful You, and, you know, Powerful You is based, it's books, it's movies, it's assessments, it's teachers trying to help people evolve their life and help them to evolve their thinking. And so our mission statement for our company is we are seekers who find the state of humanity inadequate. We believe the unrealized potential of the individual is both the source and solution to this problem. Our goal is to inspire fellow seekers to tap into their unlimited potential through a personalized combination of philosophy, science, technology, and community.
You're doing some really transformative work in the world. I'm really
I'm sure trying, but it feels like nobody cares sometimes.
Well, they don't seem to care because they don't really believe it's possible. And they see there's so much evidence that it's not possible. There's new murders and, you know, all kinds of crazy stuff. But it is possible. There's an undercurrent of people that definitely do believe and want more of what you're offering. You have to start with the people that are ready for it and let them influence the people around them. You know, that it's a slow process.
Yeah, that's what I think, too. It is a slow process, but, you know, It took me from that jail cell to my first $1 million
so
9 years.
I would like you to, right, well, I would like you to offer whatever suggestions or tips you have for someone right now who might be listening and is suffering and doesn't really believe. What would you say to them?
So what I would say is there's somebody listening to the sound of my voice right now that's considering taking their own life. And they feel like they're alone, and they feel like nobody understands them, and they feel like that nobody understands their pain, and that nobody understands what they've been through in their journey. And I want them to know that I do understand them, that I've been through different things, but I understand your pain. I understand what it feels like to feel alone in a room full of people. And I understand what it feels like to think that my life doesn't make any sense, and it's never going to get better. But I promise there is, in fact, hope. There is light at the end of the tunnel. You can have an amazing life that you just have to understand that was never about you, that there's nothing wrong with you. It's only ever about the information that you're using, and that you need to shift and change what you think and believe about yourself, because everything on the outside is only a reflection of what you're feeling on the inside. And so if you change what's on the inside, then everything on the outside changes. You know, we have a company, it's called Powerful You. It's, you know, the website is powerful-letteru.com. You know, we have a movie, you can get it on our website. We have a book, and in our book and movie are principles to help people shift and change. And I got nothing invested in this except for you, because I don't need this book to be successful. I don't need this movie to be successful. We built these products as a way to give back. And so, you know, invest in yourself and just know that there's hope, that you can have anything that you want. You can be anything that you want. You just have to learn how to believe in yourself and to question the fear and the lie that sits at the core of your being, which is that you're not good enough. And it's not true, because there's something so unique and real about you.
Beautiful. I'd like to add something to remind people that maybe the people around them are not helping them to believe, and that's why they can connect with your book and your movie and other books like that, to hear it from someone who does understand. So just say the name of your book again and where they can get it.
So our book is called Perception, Seeing is Not Believing. You can get it on Amazon. You can get it on Barnes & Noble. You can get it on our website, which is powerful-letteru.com. We also have a movie. You can buy that on our website. You can watch it in our app. We've got assessments. We've got all the tools you need to move your life forward. And they're inexpensive, people. These aren't thousands of dollars. They're not even hundreds of dollars. They're tens of dollars. Right, we're trying to keep this whole thing affordable so that nobody has an excuse. If anybody's listening to my voice and you can't afford $13.99 for the book, you email us. We'll send it to you for free, because that's what it's about for us.
Beautiful. James, thank you so much for sharing what you know, and whatever you do, don't give up. You can't worry about the people that don't seem to believe. Sometimes there's a hundred monkey effect, that when enough people start believing, it affects all the others quickly. So reach out to the people that are ready to hear.
Totally agree.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. This has been a really enjoyable conversation.
And to those of you listening, I'm your host, Dr. Erica Goodstone, saying goodbye for now. Please visit my website, drericagoodstone.com, where you can apply for a complimentary Healing Through Love session. So I will talk directly with you and browse the site and find a way to really believe in yourself. Have a wonderful day. Bye for now.